an RKO radio picture. Nat Holt presents Randolph Scott in Rage at Dawn, co-starring Forrest Tucker, Mala Powers, J. Carol Nash, with Edgar Buchanan, Myron Healy, Howard Petrie, Ray Teal, William Forrest, Denver Pyle, Kenneth Toby. Screenplay by Horace McCoy. Story by Frank Gruber. Musical score by Paul Sautel. Associate to the producer, Harry Templeton. Color by Technicolor. Director of Photography, Ray Renahan. Production Supervisor, Nat Holt Jr. Film Editor, Harry Marker. Sound by Gene L. Speet and Terry Kellum. Produced by Nat Holt. Directed by Tim Whalen. This is the true story of the Reno brothers. Clint, a respected farmer, and Frank, Simeon, John, and Bill, who were the first train robbers in American history. Looting, burning, and killing, this infamous clan rode through the middle border states, setting the pattern for the great outlaw bands which were to follow, the James Boys, the Daltons, and the Youngers. The year 1866, the place is southern Indiana. Beneath a vista of towering rock, a team of horses draws an open wagon up the side of a well-treed valley. Two men sit up front, while four others ride in the wagon behind them. Frank Reno stands looking stern under the brim of his Stetson. His brother Sim sits leaning over the sideboard, scanning the area with dark, shifty eyes. Behind him stands Bill, alert and on guard, his eyes darting across the landscape. Sitting at the back of the wagon, relaxed and ready, John glances briefly up at the sun. As the wagon rolls past a figure in the distance, Frank turns to Sim.
Look, there's Dolby.
Holding the reins of seven saddled horses, Dolby waves to the Renos from the edge of the trees. Further on, the wagon descends into the shadows of another valley. In the distance, at the top of the ridge, a man carefully scales an outcropping of rock. Reaching the top, he gazes down at the wagon below. Turning around, he picks up a white flag and waves it slowly back and forth. From a rooftop in town, another man signals the sheriff.
Tell them we got it, Roy. All right, boys, now they're on their way. Now don't anybody get over anxious. These Renos ain't ordinary robbers. They got instincts like animals. Now the least wrong move and we can lose them. So wait till they come out of the bank with the money. Understand? Out of the bank. All right, now you deputies take your positions. The rest of you people take your places along the street like we planned.
Dozens of townsmen scatter. At the farmer's market.
It's 3 cents. The big one's five.
The Renos are coming.
The farmer runs. Outside the sheriff's office.
Too bad Mr. Peterson has to miss this.
I don't think we get the Renos to wait. They ready in the bank?
They got everything set.
Good.
While the men take their places, the sheriff counsels a straggling driver.
Clear the street. The Renos are coming.
The Renos!
The driver speeds away. The Renos approach the town, unsuspecting. Slowing the team to a halt, the driver applies the brake.
Well, there's noise burning, boys.
Frank hands a rifle to the driver's partner and another to Bill.
Now, nice and casually. Remember today you're a couple of farmers. You all set? Down out of sight and stay down.
The brothers crouch down, and the wagon rolls on. As they enter the town, the streets lie still and empty. One deputy crouches on a balcony. A second lies hidden on a porch roof. A third peers over the edge of a rooftop. A fourth deputy takes cover. At the market, the sheriff and the farmer kneel behind a table of produce, rifles at the ready.
Now wait till they come out of the bank. This time we're gonna nail them with the goods.
The Reno wagon comes into sight, with only the driver and his partner visible. The wagon rumbles onto Main Street, where nothing moves except the shadows of the trees. Saddled horses stand idle at a hitching rail as the wagon passes along a row of storefronts. Inside the wagon, the brothers huddle nervously. From the seat up front, the driver and his partner eye the sleepy street suspiciously.
Awful quiet, Frank.
Yeah. I don't like it. It ain't natural. There ought to be more people around.
It's gotta be natural. Nobody knowed we was coming but us.
Making it easier to get away.
Frank's right. I don't like it either. You getting jumpy in your old age, John?
Quiet!
What do you say, Frank?
Keep going.
From their hidden positions above the street, the well-armed deputies keep the gang under close surveillance. In the wagon...
We put in too much time to pass it up.
Well, right now, Frank might as well go through with it, huh?
What do you say, Frank?
We'll take it.
Frank pulls his bandana up to mask his face. As the others do likewise, Frank and Sim ready their pistols. The wagon rolls to a halt in front of the bank, and the brothers open the tailgate and leap out onto the street. As they head into the bank, the farmer shoots, dropping Bill to the ground.
It's a trap! You fool!
The sheriff chides the farmer while Sim checks Bill.
Come on!
You can't leave Bill!
How bad is he hit?
He's dead.
Frank and his brothers dive into the wagon. Sim takes one last shot before clambering in. As the wagon pulls away, a man runs out of the bank firing a pistol. The farmer and the sheriff blast away at the escaping wagon. The Renos fire wildly through a cloud of dust. As the wagon races out of town, one of the bullets finds its mark and a deputy falls from the balcony over the sheriff's office. The sheriff and his men run to their horses and race off in pursuit. Outside town, the wagon bounces across a meadow and into a clearing where Dolby waits with the horses. As the Renos leap out and dart toward their mounts, the posse rides hard after them. The Renos mount up.
All right, let's ride!
And gallop off. The posse rides after the fugitives. Going single file, the Renos round a bend in the trail through the forest. Out in the meadow, the posse continues to give chase. Racing beneath the trees at breakneck speed, the gang kicks up clouds of dust. Gaining ground, the sheriff leads his men around the bend in the forest trail. Breaking out of the woods, the brothers storm down the side of a valley, headed for the river below. Not far behind, a posse races through the choking dust kicked up by the Reno's horses, then breaks out onto the hill at a full run. At the bottom of the valley, a covered wooden bridge spans the river. Frank and his gang gallop their horses through the dimly lit passageway, then burst out into the sunlight and ride on. The posse pulls up short on the other side of the river.
We couldn't arrest him over there even if we caught him. Jackson County. The Renos run it from top to bottom.
Well, we got one of them anyway.
Yeah. Let's head back.
Later that day, at the Reno kitchen table, Frank and his brothers eat their afternoon meal with heavy hearts. John chews quickly, avoiding his brother's eyes. Sim carries a chunk of food to his mouth on the point of his knife, staring straight ahead while he chews. At the head of the table, Frank sips coffee from a saucer. He glances from John to Sim, then down at his untouched meal, before looking over to the unused place setting that indicates Bill's spot at the table. Frank leans back from the table and pushes himself to his feet, then grabs his chair and throws it across the room. Their sister Laura comes in.
Is that going to help? Is that going to bring Bill back to life?
Take it easy, sis.
How? Not knowing when you go out that door if you're ever coming back. This time it was Bill. And the next time, somebody else.
That's the way it is, Laura.
It doesn't have to be. You could leave the state. You could go somewhere where nobody ever heard of the Renos.
Where would that be?
Anywhere.
It was my fault, honey. I smelled it!
Ain't no use carrying on about it now. Important thing is, how did they know we was coming?
Yeah, how did they know? And so far ahead.
Maybe somebody recognized you last week when you were sizing up the job.
Maybe. But how did they know when we was coming?
Outside, two men ride across the farmyard, heading for the house. Dismounting, they tie their horses to a hitching rail, then walk toward the house. Inside...
Is that our dear brother?
Yes.
A tall man enters the room and walks slowly toward Frank.
So it finally happened. A Reno got killed.
Clint, we want no preacher.
Take it easy, sir. The baby of the family dying in the streets and his big brave brothers running away. Not even animals would do a thing like that.
Dead in the street, not dying.
As if that made any difference.
That's enough of that kind of talk, Clint.
We sent for you, Clint, because we want you to go to North Vernon and get Bill's body. They'll let you have it.
You mean they won't arrest me? The Reno that's honest, that's quite a distinction in this community, an honest Reno.
We rode into an ambush. Somebody told them we was coming.
That shouldn't surprise you. The Renos are worth a lot of money. Dead.
You knowed we was gone.
You accused me of being a spy! I'll kill you!
Frank and John hold Sim and Clint apart.
Wouldn't put it past you, you mealy-mouthed psalm singer.
He was right fond of Bill, Clint.
So was I. I tried hard enough to keep him from pitching in with you. And you, as long as you live, don't you ever accuse me of being an informer again. You got plans? Keep them to yourself. I don't want to know about them, not even accidentally.
You won't.
You're notorious outlaws. The law will get you sooner or later, and they'll get you any way they can. In the back, ambush, while you're sleeping, they'll get you. Bill's death was only the beginning. Can't you see that, Laurie?
Clint shrugs Frank off and steps toward his sister.
Can't you see it?
I'm not doing anything.
You're harboring him.
What do you expect me to do?
Paul would never have left you the house if he'd known how you're going to use it.
I can't turn my own brothers out.
How far does loyalty go? They're not only destroying themselves, they're destroying you too.
Leave her alone, Clint.
Peterson won't leave her alone. He won't leave any of you alone.
We can handle anything that Peterson throws our way.
Like you did today.
Frank glares at Clint. Then lowering his eyes, he turns to lean against the wall.
All right. I'll go to North Vernon and get Bill. We'll bury him beside Ma and Pa. Perhaps their souls will be a little less troubled now.
Glaring at Sim, he leaves.
At Fisher's Fine Merchandise in the town of Seymour, Indiana, a clerk carries goods onto the front porch. When he stops to stare at something in the street, the storekeeper joins him.
Three of a kind.
Such a gall, such unmitigated gall.
Frank Reno strides down the street, flanked by two prosperous-looking men. Two women look on from a balcony.
Those kind would never be elected if the women folk could vote.
Yes, we'll get the vote one day.
Frank, the prosecutor, and the judge go into the constable's office. Meanwhile at Fisher's...
Nobody to blame but ourselves. We voted him in.
Well, why don't we do something about it?
Have you forgotten? Edelbach tried. Look what happened to him. We'd best let Peterson take care of the Reno brothers.
In his office, the constable listens sympathetically.
He was waiting for us. Loaded up and waiting. Somebody told him we was coming.
Maybe Peterson's got a man planted in town.
Who knowed you was going to North Vernon?
You three.
Now, hold on, Frank.
He's not accusing us, Judge. He knows we wouldn't kill the golden geese.
Did Clint know you was going?
It wasn't Clint. He ain't one of us, but he wouldn't have no part of setting up an ambush.
Maybe it was Sim. He's kind of talkies when he's drinking.
Yeah, and he does most of his drinking at Murphy's place.
Yeah, and he's bragging.
And Murphy's the only new man to come to town in years.
You suppose Murphy's a Peterson man?
Thoughtfully, Frank looks up at the judge, then straightens up in his chair and gets to his feet. Then walks out of the office. Sometime later, a stranger walks into a smoky saloon and saunters up to the bar.
Give me a beer, Murphy.
He puts the foamy mug to his lips just as Sim Reno enters the saloon and staggers across to the bar.
Hello, Sim. You want a little drink, eh?
Yeah, go on a little lot more. Shot him in the back. They shot him in the back.
Sim gulps down a shot of whiskey.
Yeah, I heard about Bill. What happened over in North Vernon?
I made a mistake. I shot too fast, woke up the town, and they got Bill, shot him in the back. All my fault. Clumsy. All my fault.
Sim pours himself another drink.
Well, I don't think Bill would have felt that way. He always thought you were the best.
I was the best till I made that mistake.
He thumps his glass.
I let Bill down. Now he's dead.
Pouring another drink.
He's dead.
Yeah, we all have to go sooner or later.
From the end of the bar, the stranger listens in on the conversation. Sim beckons Murphy, the bartender, nearer.
But they're gonna go sooner. Come Saturday, we're going back to North Vernon and blast the devil out of them. We'll get even for Bill. And this time, we'll get the money.
He downs another shot.
We'll get the money this time.
He walks away from the bar. Polishing a glass, Murphy glances up at the stranger at the end of the bar. Later that evening, at the Reno house, Frank and his men gather outside as Lee, the stranger from the saloon, approaches.
Murphy!
What happened?
He closed the saloon about 10. I followed him home. Through the window, I saw him write a note first. Then he went out the barn, saddled the horse, and left.
Where'd he go?
Up the Glendale Road. Couldn't follow without him knowing it.
How long ago was that?
30, 40 minutes.
But where's he mail this note?
They don't. He hides it someplace for another Peterson man to pick up.
A stinking spy.
We'll find out about that soon enough.
You reckon he'll be home by now?
We'll wait. We've got time. Tell Dobie to get the horses.
Soon after, the Reno brothers and Dolby rein in their horses at the edge of the woods and dismount.
Dolby, I'm ready to mount.
Frank leads Sim and John out of the woods and into Murphy's barn to wait. With the Renos hiding in the shadows, Murphy returns from his ride. Dismounting at the open barn door, he leads his horse inside. As he guides his mount into its stall, the Renos close in on him.
My Frank, where you been, Murphy?
Riding.
1 o'clock in the morning.
Is there some rule about when a man go riding?
You stinking spy.
Spy? What are you talking about, Sims?
You're a Peterson man.
Peterson man? You're crazy.
Don't lie to us, Murphy.
You know me, boys. You've known me for a long time.
Yeah. We know you tipped off Peterson that we was going to raid the bank in North Vernon.
Why would I do that?
Because you're getting paid for it.
You just delivered a letter saying we were going to hit North Vernon again. Didn't you, Murphy?
I don't know where you got such an idea.
We baited you, Murphy. Simmy just played like he was getting drunk and giving away secrets.
We knew that it'd flush out. And Cartwright saw you write the letter.
Cartwright's lying.
John knocks Murphy out.
Get a rope.
As John darts into a stall, Murphy struggles to raise his head.
You kill me, Frank. Somebody else will come. We'll handle him, too.
He kicks Murphy down.
Time up to the staller.
Sim and John comply with Frank's order.
John, get that horse out of there.
As Sim finishes tying Murphy up, John leads the horse from its stall and out of the barn.
Maybe we ought to let him come too so he'll know what's happening.
Ain't got time.
Frank strikes a match and gazes thoughtfully at it.
There's another letter for Peterson.
He drops the match at Murphy's feet. As Frank and Sim walk out of the barn, the flames eat hungrily at the dry straw. Later, a headline in the Chicago Inter-Ocean reads, "Cremated Alive, Peterson Secret Agent Meets Tragic Death. Reno Revenge for Killing a Brother in Thwarted Robbery." At the Peterson National Detective Agency, Peterson shakes his head in dismay as he reads the article in the newspaper. Peterson's son comes in.
Monk Claxton's here, Dad.
Oh, good. Have him come in.
Come on in, Monk. Thank you, Bill.
Hello, Mr. Peterson.
Glad to see you, Monk.
Sit down.
Thank you, sir. How are things in Denver?
Couldn't be better, Bill.
Did you read about Murphy?
Yes, sir, I did.
Well, that's what happens when something goes wrong. They're shrewd, those Renos, and vicious. Control a whole county in southern Indiana. Judge, prosecutor, constable, all on their side. Reno's had him elected.
I still wonder how a thing like that could happen.
Well, people who've had freedom as long as we have sometimes take it for granted. Come election day, they're lazy or callous. Same thing. However, it's done. Our job is to get it under.
Yes, sir. How do we go about it?
You're a married man, Monk.
Yes, sir. My wife knows the line of work I'm in.
I don't want you to jump into this thing.
I didn't know exactly what you had in mind, but to bring me all the way from Denver, the way I figure it, this is sort of a promotion. Well, don't let your vanity get in the way of your better judgment, Monk. I'm a working man, Bill, with a job to do. If I didn't like my work, I'd have gotten out of it long ago. In the war, we called it calculated risk.
Yeah, we did. I've got a new man I want you to work with, Monk.
I don't figure this is the time to break in a greenhorn.
All new to us, that is. He's had some experience along this line. Maybe not experienced with this kind of violence, but I think he's the kind of a man that can handle himself in rough going. Name is James Barlow.
Barlow?
Well, I see you remember him.
That's the same James Barlow I'm thinking of. I do remember him.
He is.
He was in the employ of the Southern States.
Which we found out after the war. Mr. Greeley said that he was worth a whole army. It's the only thing that Mr. Greeley ever said that Mr. Lincoln agreed with.
I still wonder how he got hold of so many secrets.
Certain generals' wives found him very charming.
Irresistible is the word, Dad. As a matter of fact, I recall...
Well, I wasn't the only one that invited him to dinner. Secretary Stanton had him, too. Immodest as it may sound, man could fool Stanton and me, could fool the Reno boys.
That sounds mighty reasonable, sir.
You ought to trust him implicitly. Let him run the whole show.
How does he plan to get in with the Reno brothers?
He doesn't. He plans to let them get in with him.
Some days later, a railway train steams across the open country. The engine smokestack emits a thick black cloud into the sky. Up the tracks, Claxton waits on horseback, holding the reins to another horse. He spies the train approaching in the distance. In the express and baggage car, James Barlow briefs the conductor.
In making out your report to the sheriff on this robbery, my description is as follows. 6'3", 195 pounds, hazel eyes and brown hair.
6'3", 195 pounds, hazel eyes and brown hair.
Leaning out of the car, the express messenger looks along the track before sliding the door closed.
We just hit the grade. Be about half a minute.
Good. Pull the cord.
Now, you want me to tell the boss, or you give me the signal?
After I jump, take a few shots at me. Remember, I took your gun, but you had another one hidden.
First, I take some shots at you. When the train stops, I give the alarm.
Right, over the door.
Pulling his bandana up to mask his face, Barlow steps toward the door. As the messenger pushes a strongbox from the train, Barlow leaps off after it, rolling down the embankment in a cloud of dust. Getting up, he runs and crouches behind the box before firing after the train. The expressman shoots back. Barlow shoots the lock off as Monk rides out wearing a mask. He watches as Barlow opens the box and stuffs money into a canvas bag.
Right on schedule, Jim.
Jim fills his bag with stacks of bills and purposely scatters some of the money on the ground around the box, handing the bag to Monk. He mounts up. As the two Peterson men ride away, the conductor fires after them from the stopped train. A headline announces train robbery. Incredible news from Lawrence County, Indiana. Another paper states, train bandits, express box stolen. A third headline declares, train robbery, $30,000, bold execution. Later in the town of Seymour, Jim and Monk pull up to Fisher's General Store in a buggy. Jumping down onto the porch, they go inside.
Morning.
Morning.
Ain't that old man you, Holt's rig?
Yes, he's my uncle. I'd like a side of salt meat, 10 pounds of sugar, 5 pounds of coffee, some baking soda, and a bathtub.
All right, mister.
Morning. Good morning.
I take it you're Jim Barlow, no, you, Holt's nephew.
That's right.
Said a couple of days ago he was expecting you, staying at the farm.
Mm-hmm.
You're a painter.
Yes, I am.
What do you paint?
Things, people.
Like El Greco, Rembrandt, Van Dyck.
Not quite. This is Mr. Claxton.
How do you do?
Nice to meet you.
You a painter, too?
No, I'm just looking after Mr. Barlow. He's not fully recovered from the war.
Oh.
Laura walks in.
Morning, Miss Laura.
Good morning, Mr. Fisher. Is my order ready?
Yes, just finished it.
Jim watches Laura with interest.
Miss Reno, this is Mr. Barlow.
Jim removes his hat.
How do you do, Mr. Barlow?
It's a pleasure, Miss Reno.
Noah Uhall's nephew. He's a painter.
Oh?
Will that be all, sir? Excuse me, please.
$3.20.
Jim hands over a single bill. Taken aback by the denomination, the clerk glances up at him, then walks over to his boss.
Mr. Fisher, can you change this?
Fisher examines the bill.
Mr. Barlow, haven't you got anything smaller?
Jim pulls out several more $100 bills.
Sorry, I haven't.
Fisher gives the clerk the change.
Take all my change.
Here you are, sir. Thank you very much. And come again.
I'll do that. I'll be around for some time.
There you are, Miss Laura.
Jim steps over.
May I help?
Oh, don't bother.
Quite the contrary.
Thank you.
She smiles, taking one basket, while he carries another, following her to the door. Outside, they make their way across the store's porch and into the street, passing Monk on the way. Across the street, Lee and another Reno man walk out of the saloon.
Who's that with Laura? I've never seen him before.
The henchmen eye Jim as he and Laura stroll past. Reaching her buggy, Jim packs Laura's parcels away, then guides her up to the driver's seat.
Thank you very much.
Hope to see you again, Miss Laura. May I call on you sometime?
Boy.
The Reno men approach.
I'm afraid not, Mr. Barlow.
Who are you, mister?
That's none of your business, Pete.
Better be on your way, you.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
You heard him. On your way.
My friends, you haven't very good manners.
He hits Pete, then takes Lee out with a crossbow. Monk charges in from across the street and swings at Pete, while Laura looks on in alarm.
Monk, take his gun belt.
Monk removes Pete's gun belt and hands it over to Jim, who then turns to Laura and removes his hat.
Sorry, Miss Laura.
Laura steers her buggy away while Jim looks on.
Still up to your old tricks, huh?
On the Reno porch.
$30,000, Frank. That's a heap of money.
Are you out of your mind? I told you we didn't do this train robbery.
The prosecutor reads the article.
The robber wore a mask, had hazel eyes and sandy hair, was around 35 years old, 6 feet 3 inches, weight 195 pounds. The description fits you, John.
Careful, Lattimore. It's a lot of other people, too.
$30,000. The judge would be mighty pleased to share a heap of money like that.
We didn't do it.
But I wish we had.
Don't argue with him, sir.
You're in no position to get uppity. Listen,
you've got your full portion of every job we've ever pulled, and you'll go right on getting it. So don't come around here accusing us of holding out on you.
All right, Frank.
But as prosecuting attorney of this county, I warn you...
Frank spits. Lattimore looks down at his shoe, then up at Frank. Frank returns his glare with a cool grin. The constable breaks the tension by pulling Lattimore away.
Your shoe was rough on him.
It'd be rougher not to accuse us anymore. Sit around doing nothing while we take all the chances.
Well, aces in the hole. You gotta pay for aces in the hole.
$30,000 is a heap of money.
Now, who'd have thought of holding up a train?
Seems like a business worth considering.
The constable and Lattimore race off in their carriage, just as Laura arrives home from town. The brothers come out to greet her.
What was the matter with them?
Oh, money crazy as usual. They're accusing John of holding up the train.
Yeah, but Frank shut him up. Real proper.
You think it's smart to make them mad?
They better worry about making me mad.
Laura scowls as her brothers walk away. Then, she collects her things and clambers out of the buggy. Jim and Monk ride along the private road of Noah Ewell's farm. Jim reins in the team as they reach the house.
Yep. How'd it go?
Fine, Noah. You set it up well.
Good. Buy some extra shooting iron?
No, we met a young lady. Two gentlemen objected.
Turned out to be a couple of fellas named Lee and Pete.
They're a couple of the Reno gang.
The family?
No, just henchmen.
So?
Well, you certainly started the ball rolling, all right.
You sure did.
That's the object.
In the courthouse.
But the description does fit John Reno.
John Reno didn't do it. He never does anything by himself.
Frank does all the thinking.
Frank didn't do it either.
Mine don't run that way. You're too suspicious.
You got a right to be suspicious. Our share keeps getting smaller and smaller. First thing you know, they'll deal us out completely.
How can they? We'll be reelected next month for 2 more years. They know which side their bread's buttered on.
You think we can get away with this for 2 more years? Our collusion with the Reno brothers is one of the worst-kept secrets in history. Collusion, conspiracy, malfeasance. Ugly words, Your Honor, but true. We've got to be realistic.
A bank job at North Vernon sure would have helped.
No need crying about that. We'll make it up on that Davies County job.
How much will tax collections run?
Might amount to $20,000.
This time we'll protect ourselves. We'll send Jason a portrait with him.
Oh, they ain't had no experience in that kind of thing.
Experience doesn't matter. When the money's counted, I want somebody there we can trust.
Think you'll ever find anybody you can trust?
For you, Judge.
A man comes in with a letter, then leaves.
Notes to Pomeroy at the bank. Just come across one of them $100 bills for the train robbery. Serial numbers check.
Where'd you get it?
Wade Fisher's apartment.
You reckon one of the Reno spent it?
We sure gotta find out who spent it.
Later, in Fisher's general store.
Sure, I remember. First $100 bill I've seen in years. No, you all's nephew spent it.
The one that tangled with Pete McCartney and Lee Harney?
That's right. Name's Barlow. He's a painter. New fella.
Yes, if he knew to tangle with those two.
Had a whole handful of $100 bills. Something wrong?
No. Just checking.
The three county officials make their way outside to the porch.
Did you hear that? A whole handful of $100 bills?
Something else, too. He fits the description of the holdup man.
I'd say he has some explaining to do. The fellas better get at it.
Lattimore and the constable walk away. In the Reno's kitchen...
I'm getting sick and tired of you snarling at me.
Well, then behave yourself. You know how I feel about you taking up with strangers.
I didn't take up with him. He helped me into the buggy with my packages.
Well, the boys said you and him was getting mighty friendly.
Now you understand one thing. This is my house. You want to go on using it, you better be careful.
She storms out. Frank joins his brothers at the table.
All right. Let's get back to the Davies County job. This time we're not all going in at once. Go in 3 locks.
John goes to the window. Outside, as Laura draws water from a well, Jim rides up and greets her.
What is it? Somebody I've never seen before.
Frank hastens to the window and sees the pair talking. Frank then walks to a coat rack and snatches up his gun belt. Slinging it around his hips, he heads for the door. Outside, Jim pulls out Pete and Lee's gun belts.
Figure to bring these back. Guess those two cooled off enough to be trusted with them. Besides, it gives me a chance to see you again.
Jim carries the belts toward the house.
Hold it.
Jim stops in his tracks, seeing Frank on the porch.
Get inside.
Don't order me around, Frank.
What do you want?
Oh, why nothing. I'm just returning some equipment that belongs to friends of Miss Laura's. Some pistols.
Drop them.
Jim throws the belts to the ground.
Now back away.
Jim turns to Laura.
Who's he?
I'm her brother.
Well, mister, I must say, you don't act very neighborly.
Got no cause to be neighborly. Get off of the property and stay off.
Didn't come to see you, came to see Miss Laura.
Frank pulls his gun.
You heard me.
Stop it, Frank. Stop it.
It's all right, Miss Laura. Needn't be trouble. I'll see you someplace else. When you coming in town again?
She ain't.
In the morning.
See you then.
Jim smiles and saunters back to his horse. He mounts up and tips his hat to Laura before breaking into a gallop.
You may think you're spiting me, but let me tell you something. Anything goes wrong, you've got just as much to lose as the rest of us. Get that through your pretty little head, will you?
She steps up to him.
Get one thing through your head, too. I'm not a child, and I won't be treated like one any longer.
Turning on her heel, Laura strides into the house. That evening, at the Ewell farm, two men lurk in the shadows of Noah's shed. Suddenly, Lattimore emerges with rifle in hand, followed by the constable. They join the deputies waiting hidden behind the structure. The men split up. A deputy sneaks across the yard toward the house. He reaches the porch and climbs up over the railing. Inside, Noah looks on as Jim and Monk sit absorbed in a game of chess. The deputies close in on the porch with their guns aimed at the door. Inside, Peterson's men raise their heads.
I hear mice.
Jim rises, then walks over to a desk for his wallet. Noah opens the door as Jim tucks the wallet under his belt.
Put your hands up. What's going on here? You too.
Jim steps out.
Who are you? The law. Anybody else inside that house, come out with your hands up. Or I'll sue this county for every dime it's got.
Maybe not.
Mind telling us what the charge is?
Suspicion.
Or worse.
Suspicion of what? Train robbery.
He snatches Jim's wallet.
Oh, you're a bigger fool than I thought.
All right, boys, take him into town.
Well, you can't do this, I tell you. Most disgraceful thing I ever heard of. Who do you fellas think you are, anyway?
The law, that's all. Take him in.
As the deputies escort the men away at gunpoint, Lattimore thumbs greedily through Jim's wallet.
Six nice, clean, crisp $100 notes.
Shall we, just forget the judge and split this between us?
Why not?
He gives the constable half the money.
Let's have a look inside.
Later,
we were coming to Seymour from Robinson, Illinois. We saw the crowd around the money box. We went down there. There had been a train robbery. We found the money. I guess the robbers dropped it. For 3 hours, I've been telling you that.
And for 3 hours, I've been telling you we don't believe it.
Jim stands up.
Sit down.
Lattimore shoves Jim into his chair.
Have a drink of water.
No.
The money matches. The description matches. Your arrival here matches. Everything matches.
Coincidence.
Where's the money?
You took it.
I mean the rest of it. The other $29,000.
Oh, what's the use?
Lee enters the room.
Any news? Won't talk. How about him?
Nothing.
All right. On your feet. Come on.
As Jim rises from his chair, the men encircle him.
Where's the money?
Jim eyes the ring of men, then settles into his chair without a word. At a signal from the constable, they close in on Jim. The next morning,
Lattimore was asking him questions, and all of a sudden Barlow said, get the judge. And Lattimore got excited, kept saying he was the prosecutor's attorney, and if Barlow had anything to say, he was the one to say it to.
Naturally, I'm the one to talk to. Lattimore tried to hog everything.
The judge opens the door for Lee, and they go into the constable's office, where Jim, Lattimore, and the constable sit, tuckered out. The constable lets Lee and the judge into the interview room.
He wants to talk to you,
so we're here.
Go ahead and talk. Hello. You listen to me. I'm the prosecuting attorney here.
Wait outside.
This was my doing. He never budged till I threatened to get the express messenger down here to identify him. That's what weakened him.
Wait outside.
Lee and the constable leave. Lattimore follows, shutting the door, then opening it. The judge notices and shuts it again, locking it. He takes a seat opposite Jim.
What was it you want to say?
Better have a drink of water, Judge.
Go ahead.
Jim gets up and fills a cup.
Do you appreciate irony, Judge?
How's that?
The imponderables. The little things that happen to wreck a foolproof setup that you can never figure will happen. This was a foolproof setup. I had a contact man in the express office who told me when the money would be shipped. I picked the perfect spot for the train robbery. The money box was open just right. And up to that point, everything was perfect. And then
And then came the imponderable.
As Jim drinks, the judge eyes him suspiciously.
In my hurry to get away, I dropped a few bills with serial numbers, and here I am. Irony.
Jim peeks at the judge, who follows cautiously.
Where's the money?
Hidden. My share, that is.
Your share? You're in this all by yourself.
No man could do this by himself. There were six of us, seven counting the contact man.
Where are they now?
Scattered.
That leaves three here.
Two, Claxton and me. U-Haul had nothing to do with it. He didn't know about it.
Claxton's share hidden too?
With mine at the U-Haul farm.
Where at the U-Haul farm?
Jim puts a hand on his shoulder.
You couldn't find it. I'd have to go with you.
Grabbing the cup, the judge fills it up.
Now, you're a practical man, Judge. Sure, you can send Claxton to me to prison, but it won't get you a raise in salary and won't get you much of a reward. And as for me, with a contact man who knows when the big express money shipments are to be made, it'll ruin $1 million business.
You say you've got a contact man in the express office?
A big one. A superintendent.
Which office?
I'm a practical man too, Judge.
How do I know you ain't lying?
You think I held up that train on the spur of the moment? How do you think I knew the money was aboard? $1 million business, but not with me in prison. We don't get it, somebody else will.
I like the way you talk. Like the way you handle yourself.
All I need is a little freedom.
It won't be that simple. A lot of people here in town know you were arrested with some of that holdup money in your possession.
All you gotta say is, I proved I found it around the money box. Others did.
And what guarantee have I got if I turn you loose, you won't pull up?
The best in the world. I need you more than you need me. This is a safe place to hold up between operations. Besides, if I did pull out, you'd still be better off by $3,000.
The judge grins. Jim smiles as the judge crosses the room to the door.
Gentlemen, I guess we owe Mr. Barlow an apology. He's clean as a hound, too.
Wait a minute.
Perhaps you misunderstood me. Mr. Barlow had nothing to do with the train robbery. He found the money.
Oh, well, that was our opinion, too.
Yeah, clean as a hound, too.
Yeah.
Courtright released the other two. I'm going out to the U-Haul farm with Mr. Barlow.
Why did I go, too?
And me? Try and stop you.
Oh, by the way, did you two gents give the judge his share of the $600 you took from me?
He leaves Lattimore and the constable standing sheepishly under the judge's heavy stare. Digging into their pockets, they hand over his share reluctantly. The judge grabs the cash and storms out the door. Outside Noah's cellar.
There you are, Your Honor. $3,000.
The judge opens a jar of bills.
And this is only the beginning.
All right, so far so good. Now, where do we go from here?
We have to wait for news from the head office.
Well, let's hope it won't be too long.
We hope stronger than you, since we're the ones who've been cleaned out.
Well, good day, gentlemen.
As the three officials leave, Monk and Jim agree.
I'd rather nab those three than to turn in the Reno boys.
Take it easy, Jim. One thing at a time.
Sitting at the back of the carriage, the judge counts the cash, drawing Latimer's eyes to the loot.
Was that $3,000 even?
You'll get yours, Mr. Prosecutor. You'll get it.
Just asking.
You know, I was just thinking. He'd be a good one to send to Davis County with a Reno. Instead of Jason or Courtright.
Maybe. One thing, he don't scare easy.
You reckon the Reno's a stand for it?
He'll have to. He'll make it a court order. Come on.
Later that same day, at Fisher's store.
Anything else, Miss Laura?
Oh, yes, I'd like a side of bacon.
But yesterday...
I know. I'd like another side of bacon.
Very well.
Laura smiles sweetly at Jim.
8.5 pounds, all right?
Fine.
Anything else?
That's all.
Here's that article you asked for, Miss Laura.
thank you.
Jim takes her parcels.
Goodbye, Mr. Fisher.
Goodbye, Miss Laura.
Laura's brother stops her at the door.
Howdy, Laura.
Oh, Clint. Mr. Barlow, I'd like you to meet my brother, Clint.
How are you?
How do you do?
The men shake.
Nice meeting you, Mr. Barlow.
Jim opens the door for Laura. As he follows her out, he spies the parcel in the basket and grins to himself. On the porch, the book slips out.
All right.
Jim picks it up and reads the title, The World's Great Painters.
It's a book I borrowed from Mr. Fisher.
Interested in painters, Miss Laura?
Yes. 16th century painters.
Oh. Laura returns the book to its wrapping.
I don't think you're going to find me in this edition.
The Reno brothers ride up on horseback and come to a sudden halt upon seeing their sister with Jim. Gently, he helps her into the carriage.
What time shall we shop tomorrow?
A couple more shopping days like this and I can open my own store.
It's been a genuine pleasure, Miss Laura.
I agree. Thank you, Mr. Barlow. Good day.
He watches as Laura makes her way up the street. Meanwhile, the Renos move in on Jim, following him down the road to his horse. As Jim mounts up, the brothers meet him in the road.
You aiming on getting yourself killed? Contrary, I was just planning my future. I don't like you, Barlow. Don't like you at all, but I admire guts.
Judge Hawkins says you're pretty good at train robbing.
Fair, I'd say. Seems to think you're good enough to ride with the Renos. That's a compliment. My partner and I'll consider your invitation.
No partners.
The judge didn't say nothing about nobody, just you. I see. When do we go?
Now.
Now? Where? When you ride with us, Barlow, don't ask no questions. Come on.
Having gathered their henchmen, the Reno brothers and Jim ride toward their next robbery. The gang make their way along a river, then cross it. Reaching the other shore, the gang rein in their horses.
Up! Let's give them a blow. Isn't that the state line we just crossed? Right. Any harm now in telling me where we're going?
Up ahead.
How much farther?
You ask too many questions.
What do you mean by that?
Look, you're along as an extra hand. You got nothing to say. Didn't the judge make that clear?
Yeah.
All right, now I'm making it clear, so get it through your head.
All right. We'll split up, circle around, and go in. Dobie?
Yeah.
You meet us on Church Hill. Pick John and Sim up in front of the surveyor's office. Come on, John.
They split up. In Gallatin, Davies County, Missouri, Dolby rides up to Pete and Lee, who keep watch over the busy street.
Is everything all right?
No, Frank, the courthouse is no good the front way. They got to go around the back.
But Frank didn't plan it that way.
Frank didn't plan to have the sheriff eating his dinner across the street either.
Oh.
Sim and John reach the crossroads in town and guide their horses to a hitching rail and dismount. John looks around nervously as they wait.
Sim? Hear me along.
Dolby tears through the woods to Church Hill and waits for Frank and Jim. The two men ride up.
Pete says we gotta use the back door of the courthouse.
Let's go.
Frank and Jim lead the way into town. Sim and John stay on lookout at the crossroads. Frank, Jim, and Dolby ease into town, heading down Main Street. Sim sees them.
Here they are.
Frank and Jim reach the crossroads and turn the corner at an easy pace. They head down another road with Dolby in the rear. Sim and John mount up to follow the others at a distance. Riding up to the back of the courthouse, they dismount from their horses behind a stone wall. Jim follows Frank and his brothers past the wall into the backyard of the courthouse, while Dolby stays back, keeping watch. Inside the building, a customer climbs down the stairs to the ground floor. As he leaves through the front door, Frank and his gang enter from the back. With no one around, the men go up the stairs. At the landing, Frank masks his face with his bandana, and the others do likewise. They pull out their pistols and head down a hallway toward the treasurer's office. Inside the office, the startled men raise their hands.
Take your hand downstairs so there's nobody out. Over to the safe, you. Hurry up!
The frightened clerk scurries over to the safe.
All right, open it up. Be quick about it.
The clerk turns the lock.
Ain't much money in here.
I know what's in there. I'll fill that up.
He tosses the clerk a cloth bag.
Get your hands a little higher, neighbor.
A customer comes in.
You, get over there. Move.
The man lines up against the wall. A clerk stands at his desk and peers at Jim, who pretends not to see him. The clerk grabs for a gun, but Jim fires first, shooting it out of his hand.
What are you doing?
Frank turns back to the vault.
Come on out of here.
He takes the bag of money. John pushes the customers to face the wall, then backs out of the room, with the others following suit. They flee down the hallway and storm the stairs. Reaching the bottom, they race across the hall to the back door. Crossing the yard, they join Dolby at the horses. Frank mounts up beside Barlow.
Too bad your brains don't match your guts!
They race off. They dash through a forest on the outskirts of town. Out from the woods, they race across a meadow, kicking up clouds of dust behind them. Flying into thicker brush, they speed along a narrow trail. They follow a turn in the path and race along under the cool shade of the trees. Clear of the forest, the pack tears across a field, with Frank and Jim vying for the lead. They storm through another bush path, pushing the horses to the limit. Reaching the river's edge, the bandits come to a halt.
How much you figure we got?
Plenty. Nice and clean, if I do say myself. We left those boys far behind.
Yeah, but they still got the telegraph on their side. This is where we split up. Every man goes back to the house his own way. Roundabout, too. Move out!
Jim follows Frank up a steep path. He reins in his horse, and Jim pulls up beside him.
I reckon you didn't hear me right. I said this is where we split up. I don't know this country. So go with one of them. I'm going with you. Seems as how you're the one that's got the money.
Jim smirks at Frank, who shakes his head and races off. That evening, with the men gathered at the Reno house, Frank counts their take at the kitchen table.
$21,220.
Well, split between 10 of us, that's $2,122 apiece.
That don't seem like very much. Could have been more.
Why wasn't it then?
Ask him. Everything was going fine till he took a shot at one of the clerks.
If I'd let him get his hands on that pistol, he'd have blown somebody's head off. Should have put him on the floor in the first place. Should have put them all on the floor the moment we went in.
You don't think much of the way I run things, do you?
No, not very much. $2,122 apiece for all this work and risk. You'd be better off if you went back to plowing.
Well, you'll get a chance to see what kind of a job you come up with.
Won't be for chicken feed like this, you can bet on it. Count out my share, I want to get to bed.
Frank cuts Jim his share while Laura watches in disgust, then runs off.
This time I'll divide with Claxton, but next time, he's got to be in on it. Good night.
Pocketing the cash, he heads for the door.
Cold as an icicle.
Mighty big for his britches.
That is a six-gun real pretty, though. Real pretty.
Outside, Laura waits for Jim behind a tree.
You paint a pretty picture, Mr. Barlow.
I'm sorry if I disappoint you, Miss Laura, but as you know, in our business, a little dishonesty is necessary now and then.
So you're no better than the rest of them. In fact, you're not as good. At least the Renos don't pretend to be something they're not.
I'm flattered by your interest, but if you were attracted by the painter rather than the man, maybe it's better you find out now.
I guess it is. I don't expect very much of people. But I believed in you. I wanted to believe in you. I wanted so much to believe in you.
Jim watches Laura run back into the house. He looks away sadly, then regains his composure and walks on. Back at Noah's house.
I can't wait any longer. I gotta get a message to Peterson.
Why don't you wait till morning, Monk? He'll turn up.
Maybe so, Noah, maybe not. He might have been sidetracked from his business. You know, I was warned about his fondness for women. You better get a horse saddled.
As you say. Somebody's coming.
They go to the window and look outside.
That's funny.
Noah grabs his rifle.
Going around the back.
Monk readies his gun. They wait for the prowler to enter the back door. Noah glances at Monk.
Good evening, gents.
Hi. Hi, Jim.
Noah, I want you to get a lot of started on his way to Peterson.
I'll saddle up right away.
All right.
Where have you been, Jim? What happened?
Several interesting things, Monk.
Jim writes.
Several interesting things.
Later at Peterson's office.
Letter from Barlow, Dad.
Good.
He's making progress. Wants me to meet him at the sheriff's office in North Vernon as quickly as possible.
Oh?
Get word to our field man that I'll be there Friday night.
You best make it Saturday night. May take a little while to find Hieronymus. He's always on the move, you know.
Oh, Saturday then. Hieronymus. What a name.
Days later, Hieronymus makes a house call to Noah's farm. The traveling salesman chomps down on his cigar happily and steers his wagon stocked with kitchen wares down the farm road. He draws closer to the yard where Noah, Jim, and Monk are chopping wood.
Howdy, Noah!
Well, I'll be doggone.
Hieronymus reins in his team as Noah walks up with his hand extended.
Sell anything new?
No, but the old stuff's getting better.
Want you to meet my boys. Jim, Monk, come here. This my nephew, Jim Barlow.
Happy to make your acquaintance, Mr. Howdy. Barlow.
Monk Claxton.
Acquaintance, Mr. Claxton.
What are you doing back in this territory?
Oh, I got a fine line of enamelware. Stewing pots and side dishes.
All right, you can talk now. We're by ourselves.
In my business, friend, caution becomes a habit. Barlow, Mr. Peterson wants to meet you Saturday night.
Where?
Sheriff Mosley's office in North London.
I'll be there.
That Saturday evening, Jim arrives at North Vernon Sheriff's office.
That's probably Barlow.
Sheriff Mosley answers the door while Peterson and a deputy sit waiting.
Hello, Peterson. Glad you could make it.
Good to see you, Jim. Sheriff Mosley.
Sheriff.
Howdy, Barlow.
Deputy Barlow.
Howdy.
Howdy.
I was beginning to worry about you.
Did a little worrying myself. How's Monk?
Oh, just fine, just fine. Sit down, sit down. Now, gentlemen.
He pulls up a chair.
Here's the layout. I got the clique all primed for a big haul. All that's necessary is to bait the trap, but we must bait it well.
Days later, in the constable's office, Jim delivers a telegram.
Yes, telegram. Indianapolis. James Barlow, Seymour, Indiana. Based on yield this year, the next corn crop should reach 100,000 bushels and will need your help to farm. Aunt Mary leaves here Friday the 11th on train 58 on her way to Louisville. Try to see her for a moment at Seymour. What does this mean?
That's from the contact man at the home office of the express company.
Oh.
It means train 58 leaving Indianapolis for Louisville this coming Friday will be carrying $100,000.
$100,000? So that's it. $100,000.
It's the answer to everything. It means we can go to California.
Now, gentlemen, I wouldn't be buying my tickets yet. Remember, Friday's only 3 days off. That won't give me enough time to get my men together. Claxton and I can't handle this by ourselves.
You got the Reno boy.
I don't get along with them. They're clodhoppers' crew.
They done good so far.
Reputation, yes, but they're still clodhoppers. This is a big job. It has to be handled right. Otherwise, I'd rather pass it up and wait for another one.
But when'll that be?
I don't know.
But the Reno's followed your orders on this.
You know how they feel. Frank wants to run everything.
But suppose he lets you run it.
Yeah.
At the Reno house.
You understand, they're my instructions. I won't have any arguments from anyone.
Over that kind of money, we can afford to let you run things.
There can't be any hit or miss about this. We'll meet at the U-Haul farm at 5 in the morning. I'll be waiting.
Lattimore and the Reno brothers sit over coffee as Jim crosses the floor to leave. The constable opens the door for Jim.
I'll be waiting.
While Jim heads across the yard to his horse, the men gather outside on the porch. Sim folds his arms across his chest. Jim mounts up and gallops away.
I'll blow the top of his head off.
After we get the money.
Lattimore smiles devilishly before disappearing into the house. Jim returns to Noah's farm. Clint stands waiting for him.
Hello, Clint. Barlow, I gotta talk to you.
He climbs down off his horse.
What about? Laura.
Jim steps back in surprise.
I want you to get her away from here before it's too late. I've tried to get her away myself. Even offered to leave the county with her, but she's loyal to my brothers.
I don't know that I can do anything about it.
You can break her loose. That's what you can do about it. My brothers are no good. They're destroying themselves, they're destroying Laura, and maybe you too if you don't get away.
But
she's worth saving, Mr. Barlow. Believe me, she's worth saving. Take her away. She'll go with you. She's in love with you.
Seems to me this is something she should say for herself, Clint.
He pats Clint's shoulder before walking away. On the Friday, Train 58 races through Seymour County carrying its precious cargo. The gang hides on an outcropping.
What time is it?
I don't know, but it's getting mighty late.
Here it comes. Let's get ready for it.
They mask their faces with bandanas and pull out their guns. Sim takes a lookout post. Hidden up on a hillside across the tracks, the sheriff and his men spot Sim in the distance. Coming their way, the train barrels down the tracks. Sim spies the train.
Coming around the bend.
And climbs out of sight on the hillside.
Jake, take your men around the other end of the train. Be quiet. Come with me.
The posse splits up. Aboard the train, Jim steps out of the express car onto a platform. Without being seen, he unhitches the passenger cars from the rest of the train. The passenger cars drift along the track. He then climbs up on the roof of the express car. He runs along the roof from one end to the other against the force of the wind, then stops to pull up his bandana and take out his gun. Jim leaps down from the express roof to the tender behind the engine.
Engineer, stop the train!
The engineer salutes Jim and then carries out the order. The Reno men watch in anticipation as the train glides past them. The bandits swarm in on the stopped train. Jim leaps to the ground and joins the gang at the door of the express car.
Open up,
Peterson
open up,
hides inside.
All right, open.
The messenger slides open the door.
Bring up that cash box.
The express man drags out the cash box, and the Reno men carry it from the train before setting it down to open. Peterson appears at the door.
Drop your guns. You're surrounded. No good follows an agent.
The Reno men fire their guns. At the sound of the shots, the deputies race down the hill, closing in on the gang from behind. Jim shoots at the bandits from the cover of a log. The Reno men fire wildly in all directions. Wounded, Lee dives behind a fallen tree. Frank shoots at a deputy. Monk dashes behind a tree, moving in closer to the enemy.
Lee! Get Claxton! I can't, I'm hit!
Sim, I got Lee.
Well, he never could shoot anyway.
A deputy runs up behind Sim, but John spots him in time.
Sim, on your right!
Sim fires. The deputy's body falls limp. Runs from cover as Jim reloads his gun. Finding his gun empty, Lee reloads.
Pete! It's Claxton!
Hidden behind a boulder, Pete takes a shot at Monk. Frank crawls along the ground and joins Pete, while Jim blasts away at them. As Frank crawls away, the sheriff tries to gun him down, but Frank makes it safely to a tree. With the coast clear, he bolts across the grass round the back of the train. One of Jim's bullets hits, killing Lee. Meanwhile, Frank sneaks along the train's engine. The engineer spots him walking past. Frank sneaks around the front to shoot at Jim, but being tipped off by the engineer,
look out!
Jim shoots at Frank, then scrambles to the engine. And they trade shots again. Frank climbs onto the engine. But Jim beats him to the draw, scaring him off. Frank inches along a running board on the engine. But Jim holds his ground and fires at close range. Frank shoots back. Frank backs down and leaps off the train. As he runs for cover, Jim fires a shot. Hit, Frank falls to the ground, then scrambles to his feet. Shot again, Frank crawls behind a tree. Meanwhile, Pete and Monk shoot it out. When Pete's gun runs out of bullets, Monk darts from cover and closes in on him.
Get that gun over here!
Pete tosses his gun at Monk's feet.
All right, come out of there. Hands up. Come on.
Pete walks toward Monk slowly with his hands up. Then suddenly kicks Monk's gun from his hand and knocks him to the ground. Monk trips him, wrestling him away from the gun. Both men scramble to their feet. Monk wrenches Pete to the ground by his arm, then beats on him when he tries to stand up. Pete knocks Monk off his feet, then lifts a rock to crush him. But Monk grabs his gun and shoots. Pete falls down, dead. Monk rises to his feet, but before he can find cover, Singh shoots, sending a bullet through his chest. John runs beside Sim. Peterson and the express messenger blast away at the brothers. John sees Frank, who writhes in pain.
Sim! Sim, look, they got Frank.
All right, they got him. Shut up!
Oh. They ain't got a chance here. I'm gonna give up.
John raises his hands.
Don't shoot! I give up!
Come back here, you wreck!
Sim shoots at John, but Jim shoots Sim first.
Take him into town, boys.
As the deputies carry Frank away, Jim runs over to Sim, who is wounded from the gunshot.
One.
Sim comes out from cover.
Why'd you let me shoot the yellow belly?
We are saving him and you.
The sheriff approaches.
All right, take him
the
off.
The deputies off. Take Sim away.
Mosley, did you get the man with the horses? We got the lot.
Peterson approaches Monk's body to check for a pulse. Jim and the sheriff rush over.
Poor Claxton. He didn't know how right he was when he called this a calculated risk. Lost a good man, Peterson.
A newspaper headline reads, Reno Brothers Captured. Seymour Citizens Demonstrate Against County Officials. Seymour's officials are cuffed by a mob.
You people have no authority to do this!
We'll show you who has the authority!
This is imponderable!
In the town square...
And they may get loose. They may, indeed. Nobody knows what the Renos can do.
We simply cannot take any more chances with them, not only for our own sakes, but for the sake of the whole state. All around us, other counties are decent and God-fearing, while we have been notorious.
The townsfolk listen closely as Fisher speaks out.
This is the idea of the majority of you. None of us is excited. None of us is hot-headed. This is something that has to be done. And done with as little compunction as you would kill a rattlesnake.
Clint stands in the back listening.
Anybody got anything to say?
As long as the Renos are left alive, there's always the threat that we'll be terrorized again.
I say the time has come for us to make sure we can live the rest of our lives in peace and quiet.
And to take some of the shame off Jackson County.
Anything else?
We've talked enough. Let's get the job done.
Clint leaves.
It's now 11 o'clock. We'll leave right away. That should put us there by 3 while it's still dark. Come armed and with masks.
The crowd disperses. Jim makes his way back to Noah's. He rides along a farm road with trees and fields on either side, turning eventually onto Noah's private road. A cloaked gunman waits in the shed, and as Jim rides by, he shoots. Jim leaps off his horse. Noah rises from his chair in the house. The gunman waits for Jim's next move. As a diversion, Jim throws a log, then dashes behind a tree. Jim fires a shot, which is answered. Noah comes out of the house with rifle in hand. Jim seizes the moment and bolts across the yard to a tree beside the shed. Noah sneaks behind the back of the shed. The gunman turns to shoot at Noah, but Jim fires first, knocking the gunman's rifle away.
Come on, Al. Come on.
Jim hears the crying and walks into the shed. He kneels down by the cowering figure and pulls back its hood.
Laura. It had to happen, whether they were your brothers or mine. I'm sorry I couldn't tell you the real truth about myself.
Oh, oh, Jim.
She collapses into his arms.
Who's in there?
It's all right, Noah.
You, Jim?
Yeah.
Sounded like you're trying to get yourself some night owls. What's going on here?
Noah points his gun at Clint, just arriving.
Who is it?
Clint, Mr. Ewald, where's Barlow?
He's here.
There? Oh, Mr. Barlow. Laura. They're after Frank and the others.
Oh.
Fisher and the mob. They're headed for North Vernon.
Look after Laura.
Jim rushes off.
Oh, Clint, what happened?
Fisher, Dedrick, and Foley are the leaders. They've stirred up the whole town.
Jim climbs into a saddle, kicking his horse into a gallop. Meanwhile, Fisher and his mob race across country toward North Vernon's jail, where the Reno brothers are held captive. Jim tears across the rolling meadow, hoping to catch Fisher and his men in time. The mob follows a rocky, narrow trail in the woods, kicking up a trail of dust. Jim races across a field at breakneck speed. At twilight, the Fisher mob arrives at a corral just outside North Vernon. Dismounting, they tie up their horses and walk. Jim dashes along a path in the woods, while miles up ahead, Fisher and his men start into town. In the jailhouse office, the sheriff and his deputy go about their business as usual. Fisher's mob reaches the jail and storms the building wearing masks and carrying guns.
Don't move.
Raise your hand, Sheriff. Stand up. Don't reach for your gun.
What do you want?
We want the Reno brothers.
You've been got to
give us the keys.
Frank sits in his cell, hearing the commotion in the office outside. John peers through the bars of his cell.
Simmy, you hear that?
We want the Reno brothers.
Sim rises to his feet.
Yeah, I heard him.
You men got no right
to... Give us the keys.
Out on the street, interested onlookers and townsmen are kept from entering the jailhouse by two of the mob wearing masks.
Hurry up, we haven't got all night.
Under the threat of Fisher's gun, the sheriff takes the keys from a desk and tosses them to Fisher.
Which way?
The sheriff nods.
There. All right, take them out.
The sheriff and deputy are ushered out of the office while Fisher opens the door and leads everyone to the cells.
All right, boys.
Fisher unlocks the cell doors while the men prepare ropes for the hangings. John looks on in horror, shrinking into a corner of his cell.
No, you can't! Frank!
They open John's cell.
Frank! This one next, man.
Frank!
They drag John out.
No! You've got to give us a trial! No! No!
They tie the noose around John's neck.
No!
They bring out no! Sim.
Shut up and stop banging like a yellow belly.
With a noose on, Sim looks heavenward.
All right, drag him out of there.
Two men walk into Frank's cell and try to carry him out, but he shoves and kicks them off.
I forgot how to walk.
Frank buckles over in pain, then rises onto his feet and limps to the door. The men grab at him.
Get your hands off of me.
Outside, Jim arrives. He climbs off his horse and runs to the door.
You keep out of here.
But is stopped.
You're breaking the law. I'm going in.
We're the law now.
You're a mob.
We're the citizens and we're going through with this.
Jim shoots the gun out of the man's hand and rushes into the building.
Do it like that.
Shut up. You're making me sick.
Frank, get away from those ropes.
Too late, Barlow. You want law and order. Is this the way to get it with a mob? The Renos are going to be tried. Tried, legal, and proper.
They're going to be hanged. Now.
Get. Drop that gun, Barlow.
Fisher snaps up Jim's pistol.
Get on with it. I know you, Fisher, and you, Dedrick. If you hang these men...
Jim watches in horror as the men ignore his threats and draw up the Reno brothers by rope, delivering them to their deaths. Later, in the sheriff's office.
All right, Fisher. Who are the others? Dedrick, who are they?
Fisher and Dedrick look down.
I don't like lynches much better than I like outlaws. Put them in the Reno cells.
It was worth it.
After a few years behind the bars, maybe you'll change your tune.
The deputy walks men to their cells.
Mighty good shooting, Barlow.
A doctor bandages the wounded man.
Didn't do much good after all.
Jim leaves the office. Outside, the crowd makes way for Clint and Laura as they ride up in a carriage. Jim walks out to meet them.
You shouldn't have come here.
I had to.
I'm sorry, Laura. I tried.
I know.
Clint offers Jim the reins. Jim looks to Laura for her response. She stares back longingly. He waits for Clint to climb down before he takes his seat beside Laura. Laura wraps her arm around Jim's and they ride off in the carriage together. Thus the Reno brothers passed into American folklore. The end. This described version of Rage at Dawn was created by Audiovision Canada. The narrative description was written by Julie Francis, narrated by John Carlisle, and produced by Marco Sorin. For other described movies and audio cinema presentations available from Audiovision Canada, call toll-free 1-800-567-6755. Cast: Randolph Scott as James Barlow, Forrest Tucker as Frank Reno, Mala Powers as Laura Reno, J. Carol Nash as Sim Reno, Edgar Buchanan as the Judge, Myron Healy as John Reno, Howard Petrie as Lattimore, Ray Teal as Sheriff of Seymour, William Forrest as Peterson, Denver Pyle as Clint Reno, Trevor Bardette as Fisher, Kenneth Toby as Monk Claxton.